From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Daryl C. Murphy. Welcome to Consider This from Boston. The city has selected a new superintendent for Boston's public schools just after it narrowly avoided a state takeover of the district. WBUR education reporter Max Larkin has been following these events, and he is here with us to talk about what they mean for Boston's students and families. Max, thank you so much for coming through.
Thanks for having me, Daryl.
So, Max, a lot has gone down for BPS, and what I really want to do here is try to connect some dots. Can you please remind us why the state was threatening to take over the BPS?
Yeah, I think in a word, it was because they thought BPS wasn't doing the basic stuff well enough on their own, Daryl. So things like school buses arriving on time, special education happening in the most inclusive possible environment, facilities repairs happening when they're necessary, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The state had already been monitoring the district since just after the pandemic began, and they said 2 years later, BPS has made some progress, but not enough, and they don't entirely trust all of the data that's coming out of the district.
So, yeah, can you tell us about this data? What's the issue there?
So most of the time, Daryl, the state is not there in the school district to see what is actually happening. So they have to take districts at their word that, again, buses are arriving on time, that repairs are happening as they're being reported to the state. And in this case, when Desi would show up in the district and kind of check the facts on some of the reports from the district when it came to on-time bus arrivals or bathroom repairs, they found that there was a discrepancy, basically, that the repairs hadn't happened or hadn't happened in the places that they expected, or that the buses were running late and that the district was misreporting that.
Okay, got it. But in the end, the state takeover did not happen. Why?
Well, I think you could say the threat worked, or you could say that Mayor Michelle Wu and her team persuaded the state that there's sort of a new sheriff in town. In any event, the day before the state was going to label Boston schools as underperforming, the two sides reached a deal. Is what they call a systemic improvement plan. State Education Commissioner Jeff Riley said afterwards that he doesn't want his office to be all about the threats. He doesn't want them to be, in his words, all compliance all the time.
But we also need to be a supportive organization. And I think during the time of COVID, we've been able to start pivoting more to be a supportive agency. And we want to continue that both statewide and with this Boston Public School Systemic Improvement Plan.
Now, what's that mean for the district?
Well, it means they get to keep doing the work themselves, but also that they have a lot of it. The improvement plan puts BPS on the hook for like lots of progress and fast. So by mid-August, for example, they've got to have a new parent complaint system, a kind of audit for district bathrooms, which have been unreliable and dirty too often. They have to have plans to revamp multilingual learning and special education. So it'll be an uncommonly busy summer vacation, really no vacation at all, one person told me. And though the agreement is supposed to keep the peace for 3 years, the state made clear that takeover is not definitively off the table. The threats could come back if Boston isn't showing enough progress.
Got it. The other big piece of news from last week is that BPS has landed a new superintendent who will be jumping into the middle of all of this. Can you tell us a little bit about Superintendent Mary Skipper and her background?
Sure. Skipper is a Greater Boston native, and she knows the district really well. She worked for BPS as a principal and administrator for almost 18 years, and then she went to run the schools in nearby Somerville in 2015, and she's still there. One of her big claims to fame, Daryl, is with dropout and graduation rates. Both as an administrator in Boston, overseeing the high schools, and in Somerville, she's gotten more kids to stay in school and earn their diplomas. She says it works by kind of building a network of human connections around them. So that's, yeah, that's one of her big sort of bragging points.
And what about her record on equity?
Well, Skipper would say, I think fairly, that she's had success working for pretty much her whole career in very diverse school districts. Now, she says she wants to sort of broaden out the menu of services in the Boston public schools. So building up native language teaching for English learners. And she wants to improve vocational education for kids who might thrive in that kind of environment. Mm-hmm. But she also acknowledged that she's a white woman, an English speaker, and she said she's going to want to, maybe have to, attract and retain diverse administration, diverse teams around her. There were voices, Daryl, that wanted to relaunch the superintendent search to find more Black and Latino candidates. It didn't produce any at the level of finalists. Mm. because those communities are the core of BPS enrollment. So I think that will be part of Skipper's challenge, is winning the trust of those communities.
Got it. And another piece of this is that, you know, Skipper is the fifth superintendent in the past 10 years. Is that kind of turnover normal?
Yeah. I mean, it's actually not that uncommon to have superintendents only last 2 or 3 years in big urban school districts as kind of a national average. It's a very tough job. It's 24/7. You got unexpected crises coming up all the time. And then it's a political job, which means, you know, not only change a mayor often means change a superintendent, but also if a superintendent might like lose the support of any one of 100 different constituencies, they can be kind of hobbled and then be out the door pretty soon. But of course, Daryl, you'd definitely rather have more consistent leadership in central office. And given this back and forth with the state, you've got to hope, if you're Boston, that Skipper's experience with the district means she might last a little longer in the role.
Got it. And what are the biggest challenges she's facing right now?
Well, there are those tough deadlines in the agreement with the state, but I think really it's about those trust issues. Despite some progress under the last superintendent, Brenda Caselius, you do have many, many parents who feel they've kind of gotten the runaround from BPS, that their kids deserve better, and that district staff were sometimes painting a rosier picture than was accurate or appropriate. And then you have a state saying this is a district that has been slow to change and that even its data hasn't been entirely accurate. So Skipper took that kind of double idea on right away at her first press conference after she was chosen last week.
And we need it to be a place where our families trust that what we say we're going to do, we do. And even if the data isn't pretty, we're at least honest about it, and we can lay out and explain how we're going to get to where we need to be.
Got it. So with all that said, you know, do you think that she'll break this turnover cycle? Will she last a while?
It's so hard to say. I mean, she does feel like a strong candidate, Daryl. She knows the district. Teachers seem to know her and to like her. She lives in Dorchester. She says she used to wake up amped to go be a principal at Tech Boston Academy, as a school she helped found. And she says she wants to bring that same energy to this role. And she's also been a successful superintendent in a neighboring city. Mm-hmm. But like I said, Boston is kind of the big leagues as far as this state is concerned. It's really unpredictable. Parents and community groups can be demanding and sometimes cynical. So I think the possibility of burnout or loss of trust, that's always there.
Got it. And what should parents keep an eye on through the summer?
Well, it's worth noting, Daryl, that Skipper's first full day on the job is not for a while yet. A lot of the difficult things that the city pledged to do for the state over the summer will happen while she's still wrapping up her work in Somerville. So acting superintendent Drew Eccleson, who is a district administrator for many years, will be running the show until early September. Skipper says she'll be in touch with him. So I think the big summer story is how much progress they're making on those deadlines and what kind of district Skipper will inherit when she takes over in the fall. And I hope that parents will want to watch along with us.
Understood. Max, thanks so much for sharing this with us. I'm sure a lot of parents and students will find this super helpful.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That's WBUR education reporter Max Larkin. Before we go, here's what else is going on. In response to last month's Supreme Court ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade, Beacon Hill lawmakers have been working on proposed legislation that would protect abortion rights in Massachusetts now that the procedure is banned or heavily restricted in some states. WBUR Steve Brown has been watching this all unfold and joins us now from the State House to catch us up. Steve, how's it going?
It's going fine, Daryl. How about yourself?
I'm all right. So the House has spent several hours debating the reproductive rights bill last week, and you listened to most of that. What did you hear?
Well, I heard a lot of impassioned pleas for removing barriers to getting abortion services in Massachusetts. The final outcome was never in doubt. 136-17 was the final vote. But still, 31 reps got up to speak on the bill. All but one of them spoke in favor, including Cambridge State Rep Marjorie Decker.
Let's be very clear. The Supreme Court's decision is rooted in misogyny. The motivation behind that is about ensuring that women and those who need access to reproductive health care no longer have control over their bodies. And what we are doing today is to say that will not happen in Massachusetts.
It's rare that so many reps actually get up to the podium to speak on an issue in the chamber, but many wanted to be on the record not just by their vote, but by their words as well.
Mm. Did anyone speak out against the bill?
Yeah, one rep did, Democrat Colleen Gary of Dracut, although her remarks were more in support of some amendments that she filed than an outright condemnation of the bill. She did take issue with comments made by some members, which she thought vilified those who have sincerely held religious and personal beliefs against abortion.
So what exactly is in this bill?
Well, there are a few things. This package is an amalgam of several bills. It declares access to reproductive health care and gender-affirming care to be a right secured by the Constitution or laws of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It clarifies that Massachusetts residents who might find themselves the target of out-of-state anti-abortion laws, like the bounty-style laws passed in Texas and Oklahoma, would not be subject to those laws for services provided to residents of those states if those services are provided here in Massachusetts. It also eliminates insurance copays or deductibles for abortions and related services, makes emergency contraception easier to access through public college health centers, and it also allows abortions to be performed after 24 weeks of pregnancy in the case of a severe fetal anomaly. State law already allows abortions after 24 weeks when there's what's described as a fatal fetal anomaly.
And now the bill heads over to the Senate. When will they take that up and what will happen over there?
Well, when they take that up is still a bit up in the air. I know it is a priority. I'm told they want to get something done as soon as possible, but there's no definitive timeline. While they technically have until the end of the month, they probably, though, want to backtime this in a way so that they still have time at the end of the month to deal with any potential vetoes from Governor Baker. Now, I'm not saying he will or will not issue vetoes, but with time running out, the legislature will likely prepare for that possibility. The tally in the House shows there are enough votes to override a veto if they have to. But keep in mind, the end of the session comes on July 31st.
Are you hearing any concerns from the Senate?
I'm told that a few senators have some concerns about the severe anomalies part of the bill. That sort of came out of nowhere, and senators want to do a little more research on it. But already, the Senate has approved language to the state budget that is similar to the language in the House bill, shielding Massachusetts residents from those out-of-state laws. Both branches seem to be on the same page on many of the issues.
Steve, thanks so much for this, and I'm sure you'll be keeping an eye on this as it all unfolds.
Yes, I will. You're quite welcome.
That's WBUR State House correspondent Steve Brown. And that's all for today. From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Darryl C. Murphy. Please remember to take care of yourselves. I'll talk to you tomorrow. By the way, every day you hear us tackle news in Boston on Consider This. Well, another one of WBUR's programs uses a wider lens. It's called On Point and is hosted by Meghna Chakrabarty. The show makes sense of the world from the economy and healthcare to politics and the environment and so much more. On Point talks with newsmakers and real people about the issues that matter most. Get the On Point podcast wherever you listen. Just search On Point and hit subscribe.